Hello, everyone. This is Greg Proctor, and this is another episode of Cut to the Chase, episode 14, The Myths of Franchise Ownership. So franchise is a major force in business, considering there are over 745,000 franchises located in the United States. There's approximately 38,000 franchise systems operating in the United States as the beginning of 2009. Over the past few years, 250 to 300 businesses annually have developed their concepts in franchising. Franchise employment makes up about 8 million American direct jobs, and about 13 to 20,000 prospects invest in new franchises yearly, according to the Franchise Performance Group and FranNet. So today, I have a special guest, someone who I have known for quite some time, and I kind of feel guilty, but, you know, we've only really became, like, very acquainted here, you know, like, in the past several months. And, you know, I'm glad to say, because she's a very, very lovely lady. She's a native of San Antonio, and I really like her dearly, because she's truly a hard worker, and she loves what she does. So our special guest today is Terry Villanova, and basically I want to talk a little bit about her background. Her background, basically right after college, she started in a career of insurance, which spanned over 36 years. She held various roles from the operations side to sales. Her favorite role was working with agents and helping them grow their business and allowing them to succeed. She's worked in some phenomenal places: Maui, London, Alaska, Panama. I mean, these are all places that some of them I visited too as well. Towards the end of her career, she recruited future agents and kind of helped coach them along, you know, with their developing their business and their business plan. In 2018, which is a very interesting time, very much my period was 2004, yours was 2018. 2018, she came to a crossroads in her career and moved several states away, kind of separated from the company. The choice was easy. She decided at that point in time she wanted to do something different, something outside of her comfort zone. Trust me, I truly can relate with that. The light bulb came on when she read a part of a quote in a book, and basically that quote was, "It is not the critical who counts. It is the man who points out how strong a man must stumble or where the door of the deed could have been done better. The credit belongs to the man is actually in the arena who's facing the merit by dust and by sweat and by blood." At the moment she realized she wanted to be in the arena, and that arena, for everyone that knows Terry and everyone that has been through a FranNet opportunity, you know, as far as a seminar or any type of meet and greet or networking event that they've had, Terry's been there. And certainly, you know, without further ado, I'd like to just kind of talk a little bit very briefly and give her an opportunity to chat. So she has been a franchise business consultant with FranNet. She is also involved, or she has been involved, with client relations and business development. She's also been a business coach. She's been a recruiter. She's been a field consultant. She's been a service agent, building supervisor, and a fire underwriter. Terry holds a bachelor's of management from the University of Texas. So Terry, without further ado, without me going too much further, I want to give you an opportunity for some opening remarks.
All right. Thank you so much for that, Gregory. I really appreciate your support. I want to start out that way. It means a lot to me. And again, the many people that you support. So thank you very much.
Truly welcome.
Some of the things I thought of as you were reading the bio is one of the passions I have, or one of my values, is personal development and challenges. And I think the epiphany I had with that quote was I hired a life coach for myself. Mm-hmm. And that really opened the doors to the possibilities of what's out there. So I highly recommend life coaches. They kind of steered me in that journey and introduced me to the work of Brené Brown. Mm-hmm. And her amazing work. So that is something that I owe credit to. Mm-hmm. As well as another challenge, I'll just throw this in as a side about my dedication and motivation. In 2008, I did the first rock and roll marathon in San Antonio. and raised $2,000 for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. So that was something that, again, was a challenge for me. I never ran before in that degree. I had asthma growing up, but I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to raise the money. And what a joy it was to cross the finish line.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I didn't know that about you. I used to run professionally many, many years ago, participated with the Navy track team and ran marathons pretty much all over the United States. And that's something you're letting me in on a few good nuggets that I was unaware of about you.
Yeah, they're probably the first and the last, but nonetheless, I did it. I have my medal to prove it.
Excellent. Yeah. So basically, I want to share one more thing with our listeners kind of about you. Overall, Terry provides guidance to our clients, which basically helps them make informed decisions regarding franchise ownerships. So as we've talked about, you know, today we'll talk about the myths of franchise ownership. She helps them understand the pros and cons of franchising, cost and finance techniques, the type of industries, the business models, the keys, and effective research, which will hopefully transcend into you having or potentially owning a successful franchise. And I have to admit, I've attended, even as a business owner myself, my wife was very intrigued by, I think, a program. This was probably, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 months ago since I've known you. And we did meet at that point in time. And I was listening to the teachings as well as the structure of Franet. And I must say, you know, for anyone that's looking to get into a franchising business, I know that basically Franet is nationwide. Certainly look them up in their local chapter or local areas and get tuned into educating yourself if you're looking to become a business owner or a franchise owner. And so, Terry, if you're ready, I'm ready to kind of get right into it and see if we can learn some things.
Yes, I just want to add one more thing, Greg, if that's okay. And there's no cost for my service as a business consultant, a franchise consultant. There is no cost for my service and no obligation.
Oh, well, there you go. I surely forgot to add that information in there.
That's okay.
Okay, Terry. So we're going to jump into our questions. So, you know, I think, you know, since we've talked about, you know, the subject of our podcast here being the myths of franchise ownership, what are the myths? I mean, there's all kind of things that people talk about, you know, kind of the pros, the cons, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Can you summarize those for us?
Sure. Be glad to. There's around 6 myths that we always hear. So myth number 1, franchising is only fast food and retail. So I hear that all the time. I'm not interested in food. No, thank you. Well, there's over 90 different industries with 3,600 different franchises. So it's a lot. There's a small fraction that's food. We have automotive, we have business services, B2B, residential and commercial services, retail. So many, many choices besides food. So that was myth number 1. Okay. Myth 2, franchises succeed because of the quality of the product. So I'll give you an example of McDonald's, right? I think we all agree that we could probably make a better hamburger than McDonald's, right?
True.
But it's not the product. It's because of the systems that they've put in place, the marketing, the sales, operations, accounting. That's what has made McDonald's successful. So the systems of any organization are going to make them stronger for the system that they have. So you can have great food or great concept, but if you don't know how to market and do the other business items, then you're not going to succeed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Myth 3, successful franchises emerge in new industries with no new competitors. Well, competition is good as it shows there is a market for that product or service. So did you know that McDonald's started back when there was a burger joint on every corner?
Okay? Wow.
So there was competition. And if you look at today's environment, I mean, look how many hair salon or haircut places there are, right? Mm-hmm, so there's always a new concept popping up. So it's not, there always is competition.
Sure.
This one is another big one. Number 4, franchises are expensive. So, you know, there are different, of course, investment ranges from the low end of $80,000 to the high end of $600,000. But Over 50% of the franchises are less than 250,000. Mm-hmm. And I would say what we see, our sweet spot is probably between 100,000 and 250. Many ways to fund, you know, SBA being one of them, where they'll fund 70 to 75% and then you'll put in the 25 to 30%. And again, that's a whole nother discussion, but there's various ways to finance and we can help people discover what's the best way to finance. But I hear that all the time. I can't afford $400,000. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to. Okay.
Right. Right.
Myth number five, high return requires a high investment. Again, no correlation to what I just mentioned. Service businesses are going to require less capital investment and they frequently do yield higher returns. So, and why is that? Service businesses are mainly or mostly home-based. So you don't need a brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. So the ramp up is quicker than, you know, starting the build out and the construction of a building. Right?
Sure, sure.
So the moral of the story, you don't need to buy the most expensive franchise to get a great return. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then last but not least, myth six, this I hear this a lot too, industry experience is required. Mm-hmm. Many people think, well, you know, I've never run a business. I don't have any experience. I don't think I could do it. But really what franchisors are looking for is people that have good business skills. Management, communications, marketing, operations. They're going to train you to use that system I talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. They want people who are going to use their system. Mm-hmm. What they don't want is an expert in the industry because you're not going to follow the system, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'll give an example of an auto mechanic that loves working on cars, opens his own auto shop. Well, what is he mainly going to be doing? He'll be under the hood fixing cars. But what about the other facets of the business? He's, you know, who's marketing, who's doing that? So that's not a good combination. Right. So we want to be the person to focus on being the business owner and not working in the business, but on the business. And a great book that I highly recommend that kind of illustrates that, you've probably heard of this, The E-Myth Revisited. Is the great story that talks about, you know, the importance of working in your business, on your business, not in your business.
Sure, sure, sure. So I do appreciate you explaining that to our audience. And I guess I do have one question as it relates to franchise ownership. I don't know if this is a myth or if it's even fact, but, you know, with regards to let's just say a predetermined point in time where, you know, you're not paying into the franchise fees. I'm assuming that that's an annualized cost to the business that the business owner would have to pay in order to receive full benefits of the actual franchise. And so my question to you is what is the typical timeline for a business owner to kind of start to see some return on investment? I know you described earlier service industries typically have a faster return rate, but is that over a 3-year, 5-year, 6-year type of investment?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, it's going to vary, Gregory. Later on, we're going to talk about the research, but there is a document that the franchisor must show anyone looking at their franchise called Franchise Disclosure Document. Mm-hmm. Which has some of that information. They're at liberty to only talk about what's in that document, and am I, but the people who will really tell them how it is, we can tell them, okay, what we're seeing is people are breaking even in 6 months to 12 months. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. Or, hey, you know, it's going to be probably about 18 months before you see some revenue. So we can give illustrations like that, you know, talk, but not specifics like you will make X amount in so many years. But there is a lot of documentation in the financial disclosure document, as well as we allow prospective buyers to talk to the franchisees, and they are able to say whatever they want. So you can ask them, you know, hey, you know, how much, when was it that you broke even? How much have you spent in advertising? Would you do this again? What kind of support do you get? So those are all valid questions that somebody would want to know. And you can definitely get that answered when you talk to the franchisees.
Okay. Okay. All right. So can you share with our listening audience some success stories of someone who started a franchise with no experience in an industry and they have gone on to kind of flourish and be somewhat, let's call it, successful?
Sure. I have two stories. One is an engineer. He was an engineer with aerospace and defense industry. He worked on, so very specialized work, right? Helping missiles to fly more accurately, right? He worked for a Fortune 500 company. Of course, their revenue was driven by contracts. So contracts were good, then there'd be a pause back and forth. So it was kind of a roller coaster type of payment for his employment. In 2012, he connected with a Franek consultant and wanted to see, you know, what kind of business can I start while still being employed in corporate America? And so we do have those models called semi-absentee. So in 2013, he opened his first location. So it was a massage place, somewhat like Massage Envy. It wasn't Massage Envy, but like Massage Envy. He opened, he hired a manager to run the day-to-day. His first store opened in 2013. He opened his second store in 2014. He did so well, his locations flourished, that in 2015, he was named Franchisee of the Year from that particular industry.
Wow.
After 3 years in the business, he was earning twice as much income from his first two locations as from his corporate employment. So he quit. So he quit his corporate job. And in 2016, he signed on to open his third location. So a great story there, from aerospace engineer to owning massage type of locations. I have another case where veterans are, of a veteran who was in the Marines for 4 years. He said, I was a motor T guy, motor transportation guy. He got out, went to corporate America, worked for Dow Chemical, but he always had a gnawing for self-employment because his father was self-employed. So he knew he wanted to do that. So again, he went to a Franek consultant and realized that there was a business that he wanted to start. And it's a professional residential pool service business. Right. And of course, you know, he probably didn't know anything about cleaning pools, and he's not the one cleaning pools, but he's managing a business of his employees who clean pools. He's in his third year of business. He's making money. He talked about his net promoter score of 90%, meaning that's how satisfied his customers are. He does, it's a recurring revenue model. There's 170 customers per week. He has five employees, four trucks, and a small warehouse to store the materials for the business. So he's just happy that he did it. And he says, you know, I love being in partnership with a franchise who supports me.
Right, right. So, and so based on what you've kind of stated there, you know, as a part of the model that Franek offers, can one make the assumption that you guys do quite a bit of vetting with regards to the different franchises that you guys bring on board? And do you guys kind of provide any type of QA or validation, or should I just say follow-up, with regards to that there's that interaction? Like you said, it sounds like these two success stories had success based on the fact of the franchise working kind of in conjunction with them to help them succeed, you know, kind of as a coach, a step-by-step coach. So does Franek offer some due diligence behind, you know, all of the different aspects of franchising models that are out there before you guys bring those into introducing to interested parties that may be interested in buying into a franchise? What type of process do you guys go through to vet the different franchises from a Franek perspective?
Right. Great question. You know, just like we ask our clients to do your due diligence, right, when you're investigating a franchise, we too at corporate, our CEO in the corporate office, they do their due diligence in when somebody wants to come on board of Franek's portfolio or inventory, Mm-hmm. You know, we're asking lots of questions. We're having them fill out a form. We're interviewing them. We're looking at their financial statements. So we want to make sure that the integrity of the company is there, that there's been no, you know, litigation or any other bankruptcy or anything that would cause concern. Mm-hmm. That the strength of the management team, and they have the bandwidth to help their franchisees once we start adding franchisees. So many things go into consideration. That's a great question, Gregory, but we're going to be very selective and picky. So I don't have all, you know, sometimes I have people that ask me, hey, do you have X? And I don't, right? Mm-hmm. Not to say it's a bad one, but just we are very selective in what we bring into our portfolio because we believe in it. And if something goes awry down the road, then we don't have any problem taking them out of our inventory.
Right, right. Yep. Well, that's certainly good to know. That's certainly good to know because as you very well know, with the current climate and conditions that we're dealing with right now, I'm kind of leaning towards the fact that I think there's going to be more people looking to do things on their own post-COVID, COVID-19, just because there may not be jobs available for them to go back to. So we've talked about here in the U.S., there's just shy of, you know, 800,000 franchises here in the U.S. So what type of research should someone do if they're considering towards buying a franchise? I mean, what would be some of the recommendations that you would have?
Okay, great question. So, you know, due diligence, again, I can't say that enough, right? About making sure you get all your questions answered. The nice thing to know for the viewers is that this industry is regulated by the Federal Trade Commission. Mm-hmm. So there are laws and regulations in place for the benefit of the buyer. It's not just a, you know, wherewithal, you know, kind of unregulated type of wild, wild west.
Right.
So the franchisor, usually when you're investigating a particular franchise, they're going to have a 4-5-step process that you need to follow, which is going to include looking at their unit economics, mm-hmm. their marketing, their operations, validation, and talking to the franchisees that we talked about. Mm-hmm. Also, by law, they must provide a franchise disclosure document. It's called FDD. Mm-hmm. To every prospect that is looking at their franchise. It has 21 items on there, so it's pretty lengthy. It could be 200 to 300 pages, right? Okay. But you definitely want to go through that because it has the company history, information about the officers running the franchise, litigation history, mm-hmm. Audited financial statements, and some financial performance representation. So a plethora of awesome information that you definitely want to look at. That they're required to show you, mm-hmm. because again, we want you to make an informed decision. So once you get that document, you know, the sky's the limit on what you can ask the franchisor about. You know, tell me about your support. Tell me about your training. Mm-hmm. How is your concept better than your competitor? Right.
Right. Right.
And I think another key here is talking to 6 to 10 franchise owners. You know, 1 to 2, I don't think that's enough, right? You need to get a range of the top performers, the medium, and the low performing. Mm-hmm. And to see why are the low performing franchisees, why are they? You know, make that correlation. Is it they're not following the system? Is it they're not working hard? You know, what is it? But a good mix of 6 to 10, I would highly recommend, that are in the business. You know, hey, would you do it again? Right? Are you happy? Would you do it again? So sure. Buying, in other words, you want to buy based on fact, not emotion.
Sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Can't agree with you more in that statement.
Yeah.
So based on, you know, I mentioned earlier, we're dealing with just some unprecedented times that are going on. You know, we're experiencing different things here in San Antonio. The nation is experiencing different things. So why is it a good time now to buy a franchise? And then on top of that, has COVID-19 affected what you guys have seen in what I'm calling attrition or growth in the amount of new formalized franchise ownership with the way things have been going?
Okay, great. So I'll address the first one. Why is now a good time? Well, you know, we are still seeing some growth.
Okay.
People are still buying franchises. Now, you know, it's probably not as much as last year at the same time, but we're still seeing people buy franchises. So what we're seeing and what we're hearing, Gregory, is, you know, number one, there's lower lease rates as landlords, you know, unfortunately trying to scramble to fill some of the empty spaces, right? From some of the business, unfortunately, that haven't made it. Again, because of high unemployment, there's a greater access to top talent. Before, it was the opposite, right? You couldn't find enough good talent.
Right.
Not true now. And the low interest rates for borrowing, you know, for startup capital. So the SBA, you know, if you close a loan after March 27th, you know, we're already in June, and it's fully dispersed, so it's all, you know, dispersed by September 27th of this year, you're going to receive 6 months of payment relief. So again, check with your bank, but it's got to be fully dispersed. So if you start it now, there is a way for you to get into business and get your money, you know, fully dispersed by September 27th. So those are all good things. And that's why people are jumping in right now.
Well, those are all very advantageous and extremely positive and very lucrative points that you've brought up for anyone that is looking to become a franchise owner. I mean, sometimes despite the bad cloud that is over us, there's always a positive light. And I think you've expanded upon that in those three points that you just made as far as franchise ownership is concerned.
And another thing, I mean, you ask about COVID-19. One thing I was really impressed with, Gregory, when all this started back in March, the franchisors were so supportive of their franchisees. You know, during this upheaval, that many of them helped their owners negotiate leases with the landlords, right? To help them through that trying time. Many of them have either forfeited for a while or decreased royalty fees based on their situation. So tremendous support. And of course, you know, some industries have been hit harder than others, like the food and the fitness. But although fitness quickly adapted to virtual classes, and what I'm hearing, that they sustained, they lost some membership, but they've done a pretty good job to sustain by quickly going to virtual. But what we're also seeing is many businesses that are considered essential have fared well. So businesses, commercial cleaning has done well. Residential services, where people don't really have to go inside your home, like pool care, tree and lawn service. And the other day I saw an article or an email, mobile pet service. We have a mobile pet service franchise that has, the revenue is sky high. You know, because people want that service to come to the home, right? So they've done well, and as well as coaching franchises, digital marketing, all those have done well because people know they've got to do something different and they need help.
Absolutely. So before we get into the last one or two questions, I wanted to ask with regards to, and you've chimed in on some of the resiliency that, you know, the franchise owners, the new owners, or the current franchisees and the actual franchise and the engagement that they've had. But overall, has Franet kind of adopted any new principles or policies as it relates to resiliency? Because like you said, a lot of these things in this particular time, you're having to kind of learn on the fly. You're having to make some real educated decisions based on longevity, because there's really no playbook that is structured out there for how you keep your business going. And so I was just curious if Franet was adopting any type of training into their overall culture with regards to resiliency as it's being noted today.
And you're talking about resiliency as a consultant with Franet?
That's correct.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the good things they've done is the communication. I think increased communication. We have a call every Friday where people across the country, my colleagues, share, here's what I'm hearing from the bank. Here's what I'm seeing in my state. Tremendous communication to know, hey, this is what the Workforce Commission is saying. So we're able to, like you said, adapt, or like, okay, maybe we need to stay away from food for a while, recommending food franchises, right? Or maybe we need to shift over here to more home-based. So tremendous communication support webinars. In the very beginning, it was quite a bit of webinars, right? To learn what's mm-hmm. going on. How can we help current clients with the SBA process and PPP, mm-hmm. you know? And so to get over that fear and just to support, I think one thing I love about this organization is the teamwork and the support of each other, that people are willing to share best practices, Gregory. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we all win, I think, when we do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, and we encourage each other, right? So at the beginning, it was a little rough, but I think we're hearing good stories. Everybody says it's going to turn around. It's turning around. History says it. And, you know, they've been around a lot longer than me. So it's starting to come to fruition, which is great.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I know for my own business, we're starting to see things start to pick back up, particularly as it relates to, you know, a good indicator for us is when we're looking to see how much government spending is going to happen. And since we've been in a lull for about 3.5, almost 4 months of minimal government spending, well, we've got the end of the fiscal year coming up. And so we're going, hey, it's June, guys. And if you're planning to spend all this money, then these contracts have to be let and people have got to kind of get back to work. And so obviously, you know, there's indicators there that we look at just as well as what you guys will look at on your end as it relates to franchise ownership. Mm-hmm. So as we get to a point of trying to wrap up, what are some of the solid recommendations? I mean, we've talked about the myths. I think, you know, there were things there that you discuss in the overall myth perspective that certainly, you know, one or two of them were quite new to me, you know, as far as, you know, emerging into new markets. You know, a story there for me is my sister's in the food industry, and she's always kind of stated the same thing. You know, she likes having other restaurants around her restaurant primarily because it brings more clientele into that geographical location. So,
exactly.
So certainly that's certainly something that's always a positive. And then the sure fact of, you know, understanding whether or not it's expensive. And I think the way you broke it down, you know, it is simply, you could almost look at it as if you're buying a house, particularly if you have the ability and the wherewithal to kind of go through the SBA process, which I've done that as a small business. We've gone through the SBA 8A certification and other certification programs that we've gone through with the SBA. But when you look at 35% or even 30% or whatever that number is, even though it is a substantially large capital investment in the context of where we are today and people having to look at their savings or 401k to tap back into it. But like you said, if you're looking to make that transition, it could be a positive. It could be a win-win for everyone that's involved. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I guess I'm looking for some takeaways that our audience would be able to consider, you know, in a standpoint of franchise ownership. What would you consider offering to our audience?
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you for that. So first of all, I think, you know, I was thinking through the question and I think someone would need to ask these kind of critical questions, kind of dig deep, right? And if mm-hmm. they have a significant other, because it's a family decision, right?
Yep, yep.
And ask, you know, what is my compelling reason for owning a business now, mm-hmm. right? What do I want business ownership to do for me and my family? Mm-hmm. What are my financial and my personal goals? And last but not least, you know, dream. What does a home run look like in 5 years? Mm-hmm. These are the questions that a consultant will ask so we can kind of build that for you, right? Okay. And then I would say, you know, my services are free. The first step is, you know, they can schedule a call with me. And we have a proprietary assessment. Mm-hmm. It kind of assesses your business DNA, Gregory. Mm-hmm. Kind of helps us determine, you know, what would be a good match for someone? Where would they be most successful based on their goals and their motives and the way they view the world? Mm-hmm. So I think even if you don't move forward at this point in time, I think taking an assessment to see what it says about your business DNA would be very insightful.
Right, right.
We also have a book. It was a book written by Frannet, but it's called More Than Just French Fries. Mm-hmm. And it highlights 15 prominent leaders from various industries, various backgrounds, talking about their journey in the franchising world, the lessons they've learned, and the success they've had in franchising, why they chose franchising. So I think if franchising is the route for someone, that is an excellent book to get from Amazon. It was on the bestseller of Amazon.
Okay. Great recommendation. And I'd also like to tell our listening audience, certainly if they're interested in finding out more, you know, the website for Franet is franet.com. That is franet.com to be able to go out and do some further research. And certainly, you know, here in San Antonio, there is a division of Franet, which Terry is a part of. And I've met Terry and along with some of her colleagues, and they're outstanding people, very informative to give you whatever you need if you're interested in starting a franchise. And so, Terry, I'd like to say thank you very much for the commitment, the dedication, and being a part of our program as a special guest. Any closing remarks?
You know, I want to say thank you so much for the opportunity to share my work and what I love to helping people and what I love doing. And my goal today, Gregory, is that, you know, people listening will kind of get in that arena like I did, you know, get a little dirty and be part of the action. And, you know, it'll be a roller coaster, but it'll be a lot of fun and it'll be so good on the other side.
Absolutely. And certainly your passion comes through with you know, Franet, and basically your passions come through in this podcast, and we greatly appreciate that. And certainly I owe you a dinner and a nice glass of wine at some point in time.
All right, whenever we can do that, I'll take you up on it.
Yeah, once things subside, we'll have to catch up again in person.
Yes, that'd be nice.
Okay, Terry, well, thank you very much. We'd like to say thank you to our audience. This is Greg Proctor with Cut to the Chase. Have a wonderful day. Be safe. Bye-bye.
Bye.